Good morning, quarter after 8 on your 21st of January. It's Galesburg Live here on WGIL. I'm Jim League, and our thanks to David Erickson, who just stepped out, and he's headed to the Knox County Farm Bureau's annual meeting, which will go on out at Lake Story this morning. And speaking of that, we'll have to let our gentleman that's in here now go in a little bit, as he'll be the featured speaker at the event, as we got Ray Deffenbaugh joining us here from Henderson County, who's the president and CEO of Big River Resources. And Ray, we've talked to you on the telephone a few times here on the air, but this is the first time we've had you in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, you're certainly welcome, Jim. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, we want to first of all just kind of get to know you a little bit and your background. Are originally from Henderson County, or you tell me you got some land up in the Streeter area?
Yeah, I'm a Livingston County, the tribe that I come from, Central Illinois. That's roughly 100 miles, or maybe from Galesburg is probably 85 miles or so east of here, so Streeter, Pontiac area. Mm-hmm.
So how did your path lead you over here through the course of the years?
Well, about 46 years ago, I came over from Cornell. I was teaching ag there to go into banking, ag lending and trust work, Vantage Farms. So came over to work on that and been here ever since. Been in banking ever since, I guess, mm-hmm. in a certain degree, one way or another.
Sure. Well, and that agriculture and banking conglomerate in your life has really helped to move you forward into what's become a big business with ethanol. And let's talk a little bit about that. How did you become involved in this that was really a fledgling business years ago that now has become very viable?
Well, we had been looking to add value to our rural communities. When I first came over here years ago, and when I was teaching ag, a lot of farms had livestock, and that was the traditional way of adding value. In fact, there was a lot of farmers in this area that didn't sell any grain. They walked it off in the form of livestock. So that industry has changed, as well as a lot of other things in agriculture. And there are some that have put up hog confinement and so forth, and those are good ways to add value and utilize corn and help the grain farmer as well. But not everybody wanted to do that, nor was it acceptable in every community necessarily. So we were looking for new ways to add value. In 1992, we had a thing in Peoria called Give Them an Earful, Give the Legislators an Earful. The ear meaning ear of corn.
Sure.
And promoting ethanol. There were still some synergies that needed to be developed in ethanol to make it a little more efficient. One of them was a molecular sieve. And so when those synergies took place and the efficiencies were developed in ethanol, it moved forward along with some legislative efforts that encouraged it. And so it's really helped the whole community, not only the grain farmer, corn and beans. While we don't make ethanol out of soybeans, it's still a rising tide, as they say, raises all ships. And so it's helped there. And then the livestock man can use the co-product DDGs. Mm-hmm. Additionally, we pull off corn oil, which goes into livestock feed and biodiesel production. So.
Yeah,
it's a win-win in my opinion.
I was going to say I didn't know at what point did in your mind it actually become a win-win, because in theory the idea was we can use some of this corn production off of the land. That's great for agriculture, gives them a local market. But it's as a businessman, it's got to be a profitable thing going forward.
Right.
When you got the government interested in the possibilities of this, is that kind of when this thing was able to take off a little more?
Well, there was an embargo on oil, and then oil prices spiked up so high, and so the government did become interested, or more interested anyway, in being less dependent on other nations that particularly didn't like us for our energy. So I kind of look at it in this manner. We're the most efficient food producers in the world. We feed the world, actually, it seems. And so for quite a while, agriculture, U.S. agriculture, was dependent, especially in the 80s, on government subsidies for their net profit. Farms changed hands, people lost farms because the price was down and costs were up. And so if you're dependent on other nations for your energy, which we were then, and then if you've got an industry that feeds the world, especially feeds the United States, that's dependent on government subsidies, it would seem that no industry that's dependent on government subsidies for their profits is destined to be long-lived. So if that's the case, and if you don't find a solution to that problem, and additionally, the taxpayer, especially in recent years, has lost his appetite for those type of subsidies. So if you've got that and you are dependent on other nations for their energy, and then you are dependent on other nations for your food. Now, you know, I've taught in Russia and I've taught in Moldova, and I've seen what has happened in South Africa and Zimbabwe and in these other nations where they destroyed their food-producing capacity. At one time, some of these nations exported. Now they can hardly feed their own people. And once you destroy the infrastructure, it's very, very difficult to get it back. So if you destroy that infrastructure, if you don't find a way to make agriculture profitable in the United States, and you're dependent on other nations for food and energy, they'll take us to our knees in a short order.
Wow. You mentioned being in Moldova and Russia. How did they destroy? Was it the communism that destroyed the profit motive, or just how did they destroy their ability to produce there?
Well, it was quite a series of that, the profit motive, and it would seem to me like the communist notion of centralized decision-making, you know, one person making a decision that controls the whole agriculture. And agriculture is not made up. For example, if I farmed in Livingston County and if I farmed in Warren and Henderson County, the land's a little bit different. There's different procedures, different methodology that you need to use. So there's not one rule fits all. And that's been a concern of a lot of folks, Farm Bureau and other farmers, that Washington gets the idea they could set a rule down and it applies to everything. And that's just not the way agriculture works. And you can look at these other nations and see quite well that it doesn't work. So it was centralizing the decision-making possibility, taking away the profit motive, keeping them as small farmers when they did break it up to where they're just a few hectares in those countries where they didn't have a large enough scale. And then the other thing, too, and I think people overlook this, the United States was subsidizing their agriculture in those days, and then they were sending cheap grain to those countries to help feed them. So their farmers couldn't compete. There was not enough profit in it because the grain was too cheap that we were sending over. So there are people that complained about the United States grain going up. Some wanted to blame ethanol for that, but there was certainly a drought that was involved that affected it. But it raised the prices worldwide, and the production worldwide went up because now those farmers could produce and put venture capital in and afford better machinery and better methodology, fertilizer, and so forth. So when you look at the whole situation, it really buoyed up quite a change from what it was 30 or 40 years ago.
And quite a change also in the energy situation. I look back, as you mentioned, to the fear that Middle East was going to cut off the ships, and how do we get energy independent? And I look at what's transpired here in the last 10 or 15 years, and it's almost a miracle. I mean, with what we can do with the fracking, the discoveries up in the Dakotas and now down in Texas, and the additions of ethanol and biodiesel, I mean, did you ever see this situation with energy turning around as quickly as it has in the U.S.?
No, I don't think many saw that. It's kind of interesting, of the things that we didn't see, or we would have invested perhaps more in tech stocks, and most people didn't see the big change that was coming there. I remember in the bank, I bought the first computer. I suggested they buy a computer for the farm work, They couldn't see that happening. And so I bought the first one, and it remains in my basement yet as an antique. Someday it might be worth something.
I guess.
But, you know, change came slow. So I don't think a lot of people saw the fracking. I think there was a generally held view that there was a lot of resources down there, how to get them and capture them, and that was a surprise that fracking brought on. So.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ray Deffenbaugh. It's 825 here on WGIL and Galesburg Live, and we're talking about the Big River Resources LLC. And Ray, let's kind of go back to the ground floor, the history of Big Rivers. At what point did you actually say, okay, let's get this thing rolling, and how do you get started? Where did it all begin?
Well, it was kind of a combination of things. You know, we were producing a pretty good product in the agriculture field, but we weren't capturing the value. Somebody else was capturing it, and it was leaving our communities. And so as we looked around, we saw the small communities drying up. We saw our youth leaving the area because there weren't good jobs. And, you know, you either accept it and say, well, that's the way it's going to be, or you try and do something about it. And the secret was to add value what we were good at producing, corn, soybeans, livestock, and so forth. And so that's where ethanol came in. And on the energy side, I imagine some of your listeners can remember the lines at the gas station when you weren't allowed to cap off your tank and there were shortages. So it seemed like a perfect fit. It was renewable. And so we decided with three goals to formulate Big River. And we also did a unique thing at that time. We knew there was some type of civilization west of the Mississippi River. We didn't know what kind it was or how they could be trusted. And what we did was join forces. So we joined Illinois and Iowa together, and we found out when they're cut, they bleed.
Those
when they
Hawkeyes
lose a loved
so
one,
bad,
they have
huh?
sorrow. Yeah, they weren't too bad. And so it was really a matter of unifying forces with a common goal. And that common goal was to provide jobs, to preserve community, and to add value, provide profits to the shareholders and add value to the corn grower thing. And so those three goals was our initial thoughts, and I think we've fulfilled them fairly well.
It takes a good leadership team, and I know I don't know many on there, but of course Les Allen over at Monmouth has been integral in this with you for a long time, hasn't
he? Yes, Les Allen and the whole group of people, Andy Brader from Iowa, and actually on our LLC board, we're also unique not only from being Iowa and Illinois, but we're unique from the standpoint as we started out as a co-op. But we knew because of the nature of agriculture, there wasn't probably enough capital to build what was necessary for the size ethanol plant that we wanted at that time. And so we put the possibility in there to form a joint venture, to form an LLC, and that worked well. We are a co-op LLC joint venture. And, you know, what we were asking of the farmers, Knox County, it was their farmers, Henderson, Warren County, and the Iowa, Des Moines County, and so forth, Lee County, they were really good because we were asking them to go outside their comfort zone. Most farmers invested in machinery or land, fertilizer, seed, tiling, and so forth. But to invest in venture capital wasn't at that time a common thing, and especially into something such as a factory or something. And of course, the other thing was the risk was great. What we were building at that time, no one had built before. And so we were asking them to go outside their comfort zone and invest in it, number one. And we were asking them to take some risk because we were asking them to invest in something that hadn't been done before. They had made ethanol before, a smaller scale, 20 million and so forth. And some of them were 30 million, a lot of them were 15 million. But we were asking to build 40 plus.
Yeah, well, and honestly, anytime you're doing something new, there's a healthy dose of skepticism.
Yeah.
And some places didn't. I mean, the proposal in Canton did not go well. They ended up, a lot of people lost some money in that.
Yeah.
But when I talk to people in agriculture, I always hear them say, well, Big Rivers does it right. That's the thing I've heard a number of them say. You know, those guys do it right. That's got to make you feel pretty good.
Well, it does, but you know, I think you have to remember one of the motives for doing it right. We always said, and it's not just one individual, it's the entire board and the investors, because they had the faith to invest in us. We couldn't have done it just on our own as far as the board is concerned. But there's, you've traveled to Burlington, and on 34, there's a big cottonwood tree that overhangs the highway near the Gladstone Junction. Mm-hmm. And all the rope in Warren, Henderson, and Knox County was bought at that time for this neck of mine if this thing failed. So there was a good incentive for this thing to move forward. But all joking aside, failure was not an option, because mm-hmm. if you're coming out of hard times, capital restriction and so forth, and you just think, well, if this don't work, I'll move on to something else, then you've done more harm than good, because you've taken a tight capital situation and made it worse. So we approach, and I say we, not only the investors but the board, approach this from the standpoint that it has to work, and it has to work as a team, and that's probably one of our greatest strengths, is the teamwork and the support that we've gotten from the investors and the board and so forth.
Ray, we'll talk at length about the scope of your operations, how you've grown over the years, and also want to get your thoughts about the national scope as far as a lot of talk about renewable fuels in Washington right now. We got a new ag secretary. We got a new president. I'm guessing you probably got a few things you can share with us on that, too. So.
Well, for that and 25 cents won't buy you a cup of coffee, but I will share it with you.
All right. Well, we'll keep you around, Matt. It's 8:32. We'll get news next and continue with Ray Deffenbaugh on Galesburg Live.